It was 8:45 on Friday evening, and Flight 73 from L.A. to Vegas had been airborne for almost an hour and soon would be landing. Jack and Roy had left the LAPD on standby, with the express instruction to inform them as soon as possible of any developments. They were looking for possible targets in Las Vegas, but there were too many to narrow it down to a manageable number they could keep under surveillance. The last two bombs had been planted in banks, but there was no reason to assume that Sabina would continue to operate like that. Banks were part of the establishment and were pillars of strength, institutions that the population could have faith in and could rely on. They represented the country, its prosperity, and the people. Yet they'd been chosen not just because of their function, but for their location and to maximize the damage caused. The bank in Washington was chosen for its proximity to the White House, and the bomb in Miami had been placed in the busiest and most densely populated part of town. But in a city like Vegas, that could be anywhere. It was a city founded on hotels and casinos, where the streets were filled 24/7 with tourists and lifelong gamblers and prostitutes touting their wares. Vegas was a law unto itself, a city where anything goes, the national destination for hedonists seeking refuge from the constraints of everyday life. So almost anywhere in the city could be a target. The city itself was the target. It was impossible for Jack to predict where Sabina would strike, and he had to hold out on a bit of luck coming his way. But many miles away from the city of sin, and despite all of Jack and Roy's and Werner's efforts, Sabina was taking things into her own hands. At around 5:45 Pacific time, Sabina stood on North Beach in San Francisco, looking out into the bay. To her east was the Bay Bridge, and on the other side of the water she could see Oakland's Inner Harbor. And to the west was the ominous sight of the Golden Gate Bridge. Its hulking red metal construction stretched into the sky, and wisps of white cloud floated by its uppermost reaches, giving it an almost spectral appearance. Sabina stood gazing out over the listless water, contemplating what she had to do. She had just left a cafe on the edge of Chinatown, where the news reports were still occupied by the explosions in Washington and Miami. The president was said to have been moved to a secure location, but no statements had at that time been made about who was carrying out the attacks. This had left the media to devise their own reports and draw their own conclusions, and they'd run rampant with this free rein. Names from all over the Middle East were mentioned, and all sorts of reasons given, but nothing amounted to more than speculation. She was halfway through her mission now, and as she stood on the sun-drenched West Coast, thoughts of her past engulfed her. She wanted to complete the mission, fueled not just by the hate that consumed Suleiman, but also by the thrill of the act itself. The risks and payoff were why she did it. A confused urge for revenge for her father's death served as the initial catalyst and was an easy emotional self-justification. But it was carrying out the attacks themselves that was the real reason. The power and the bloodshed were like a drug to her, and once she'd tasted it, her thirst and desire for more was unquenchable. She stood on the banks and looked out over the bay. The water was choppy and looked cold, but Sabina was mesmerized by it. She ached to be out there on it, hidden amongst the waves and lost in its anonymity, free to live her life. But she knew that she couldn't. She'd come too far now, and she had to complete her mission. Suleiman would not allow her to do anything else. She took one last look at the ocean in front of her, and then walked back to her car. She got in and pulled out of the car park, turning back towards the city and looking for somewhere to plant her bomb. She drove west along the northernmost tip of the city, past the Anchorage Shopping Center and Aquatic Park, and then turned right down Columbus Avenue and through Washington Square into Chinatown. The streets were busy with people, excitedly looking forward to the weekend, and she couldn't see anywhere. It was all restaurants and shops, but no municipal buildings. she had to find somewhere that was open to large numbers of people, but that was also public. It had to be a public building. The bombs were to attack the nation and the government, not private companies or groups of disparate people. Ethnicity was not the issue. Nationality was. She continued southward through the city, looping round the streets, searching for a suitable target, in a sort of homicidal spiral, circling her prey until the time to strike was just right. And then she spotted it. On her left-hand side was the perfect place, public and open, yet at the same time secluded and concealed. She continued down Turk Street and turned around, doubling back on herself along the adjacent Golden Gate Avenue, retracing her tracks back to where she'd been. She pulled up by the post office just off Jefferson Square. It was an ideal place to plant her bomb. Open and next to a busy public square in the heart of the city, but at the same time secluded, making it all the easier for her to plant the device. She turned into the parking lot, which was placed between two parallel streets. It was large and busy, with barely a bay free, and she pulled up at the end closest to her target. She could hear the traffic roaring by on either side, and she sat in her seat, watching the area for a moment, surveying its suitability. People walked through, getting back into their vehicles and driving off, while others used the lot as a cut-through from Turk Street to the neighboring avenue. As a target, it was faultless. The post office itself was a large building, distinctly older than some of the edifices around, and a remnant of years past. It would be busy during the day, and the lot would ensure that there would be no shortage of human targets in the vicinity when the bomb detonated. Sabina leaned over to the passenger seat, moving her flight bag onto the floor, and pulled back the rug that covered the bomb, watching carefully for any passers-by. She primed the detonator charge and set it for 65 hours' time. The bomb would explode just before 11 a.m. on Monday morning, when the parking lot would be at its busiest. Taking one last look around, she picked up the small sports bag containing the bomb and got out of the car. She walked the 20 yards or so through the lot, acting as confident and nonchalant as anyone, her baseball cap pulled down low over her head. She stopped just outside of the post office. Its doors were closed and the lights off inside, but it would be anything but deserted come Monday morning. Surrounding the building ran a border of plants and shrubs, well cared for and manicured, but dense and concealing. And this was where Sabina placed the explosive. She stood by the bushes. They reached up to her midriff and were too dense to see through, carefully tended to and sustained through the autumn and winter months. But it was the end of the week, a Friday evening, and no one would be tending to them over the next few days, for sure. Nobody would be working the weekend. She leaned back against them and lifted the bag up to just above her waist and then leaned round and casually dropped the bag. It fell a little way, but the handle got caught on a small branch and the bag hung exposed a couple of feet from the ground. She turned round and reached over the bush and untangled it, letting it fall down into position, well hidden from view. But as she did so, she heard a voice behind her.
"Hey, lady, you all right there?"
She turned to see a young man standing only a few feet away, smiling at her. Long locks of reddish-brown hair swirled about his face and rested on the soft collar of his garishly colored shirt, thick blue and green stripes, which swept around his thick and muscular neck. He wore long, baggy blue jeans that were worn at the bottom from where they scuffed the ground, and he carried a skateboard in his left arm. He was arching his neck, trying to look round Sabina and see what she was doing.
"Did you drop something?"
"Yeah, I just dropped my keys, but I found them."
Sabina flicked her hair, and she smiled flirtatiously at the young guy. She stepped forward towards him and distracted his attention from the bush.
"What are you doing here? Do you always hit on single women in parking lots? Is that your thing?"
"Hitting on? Look, lady, I was just seeing if you were all right," he said defensively. "You look like you could have used some help. I don't know."
Sabina looked at the guy, who shuffled uncomfortably and fidgeted with his board.
Well, if you are so keen to help, there is something you could help me with.
Sure, lady.
Sabina led the guy across the parking lot to her car and walked around the back of it to open the trunk.
I need to give this case to my sister. That's who I'm waiting for. But it's too heavy for me to get out of the trunk. Do you think you could lift it for me?
The man put down his skateboard and looked into the trunk, but all he could see was a small bag.
What, this?
He said, incredulously pointing at it.
Yes, it's too heavy for me.
The guy smiled and leaned into the trunk, grabbing the bag with both hands. But as he did so, Sabina stepped back and looked around the parking lot. It was empty, and there was no one else in sight. And then she pulled out a Browning 9mm tucked under her belt and pressed it against the back of the man's head. The silencer was attached, and so there was no noise when she pulled the trigger, except for a small splash as blood and sinew sprayed over the inside of the car. The young man's body fell partly into the trunk, and Sabina helped it along. Picking up his legs and tumbling them in, his lifeless body still warm, but now missing that vital beat of life that had brought him into that position in the first place. The bullet had gone straight in and out, leaving a small entrance and exit wound on the front and back of his head, from which blood was now flowing. Sabina rolled his body over, so he was resting on his front, his back and neck contorted under the weight of his body, and she then picked up his skateboard and threw it on top. His youthful life had been mercilessly cut short. But Sabina had no concerns for this. All she cared about was protecting herself and the bomb. Her bag, and more to the point, the bomb concealed within it, was now in place and hidden from view, and no one would see it or even be aware of it until it detonated 2.5 days later. She threw the gun into the trunk and slammed it closed, and then she got back into the driver's seat. Looking in the rearview mirror, she could see that her face was splattered with the man's blood. She looked at herself for a moment, the red speckles dotted across her perfect and blemishless skin like red petals floating across water. And then she wiped them off, creating a red streak across her cheek that took several wipes to clear. Unperturbed by her close call, she started the engine, just as an old woman walked past the front of the car. She was short and slight and had probably been in the parking lot the whole time, her tiny and diminutive frame too short to show over the top of the row of parked cars. But she hadn't heard or seen anything. Sabina watched as the old lady smiled and tried to raise her hand to wave. But the frailty of her elderly years prevented her from doing so, and the onset of senility, unmistakably visible through the deluded half-smile on her face, withheld her awareness of her limitations. As soon as she was out of the way, Sabina pulled out of her space and drove off, heading straight through the city to the freeway, and then south to the airport. She drove with care, staying well within the speed limit, and kept a wary eye open for police patrols as she drove along the highway. She was alive with the buzz of a kill, and the adrenaline was surging through her veins now. She checked her watch. 7:20. It was just under 2 hours until her flight to Las Vegas. She pulled into the airport off the freeway and walked into the terminal, leaving the car and the contents of its trunk in a long-term car park, with no intention of ever coming back to it. She walked up to the counter and requested a single to Vegas. The impeccably coiffured assistant took the details and pushed the necessary buttons on her computer, her long and manicured nails tapping away at the keys as she did so. Sabina paid for the fare in cash and collected her ticket from the woman, and then walked fearlessly into the departure lounge. Chapter 28. Jack and Roy's flight had landed around 9:00 on Friday evening, and they were being driven to the CIA offices in Las Vegas when Don Coyne called Jack on his cell.
Jack, it's Don. I've got that information you asked for. Sabina Tlaib bought a first-class one-way ticket from Miami to L.A. on Wednesday with Delta Airlines.
That's great. Is there any record of where she went on to from there? San Francisco or Vegas or anywhere?
No, I'm afraid not, Jack. That was the only flight registered in her name. But there was something else. A nurse was murdered yesterday morning in her apartment just off Sunset Strip.
She was shot twice from close range. And get this, the killer used a 9mm, and with a silencer, too, because her neighbors didn't hear a damn thing. The poor girl lay there in her apartment until someone from the hospital called and reported her missing when she didn't turn up for her shift. It doesn't look like your usual lowlifes, Jack, that's for sure.
More like a professional hit, huh?
Exactly.
And you think it could have been Sabina? Jack asked.
We know it was, Don replied assuredly. Her prints were all over the place. But it looks like whatever happened wasn't part of her plan, because she left the place in a real hurry.
You mean you think she was disturbed by someone?
Well, we don't know for sure. Nobody saw anything, and she didn't leave anything behind, but she didn't make any effort to cover up after herself either.
Jack paused and thought for a moment. Why the hell would you kill a nurse? He said quietly. Was there any sign of a struggle, Don?
No, none at all. That's what doesn't make sense. It was a clean shot. I doubt the victim even knew anything about it.
Jack thought to himself for a minute, trying to figure out what would cause Sabina to commit such a careless murder. Everything she had done had been so meticulously planned and carried out with precision that a random murder, leaving a dead woman in her apartment and her prints all over the place, just didn't fit right. Why the hell did she do it? Was she working with Sabina? Are there any signs that she was a part of the bombings as well? Could it be that there was a little power struggle going on or something?
I don't think so. That's what I thought initially, so I asked around. And get this. The Chinese restaurant on the corner from her apartment said she was a regular customer, and that night she placed an order for two. And a barman up the street says he saw two women matching their descriptions drinking together that night.
So what, Roy? That doesn't tell us anything.
No, it doesn't. But where they were drinking does. They were seen in a gay bar on Sunset, and judging from the barman, they were really hitting it off.
Huh. So it looks like a one-night stand that went sour.
It could be, yeah.
Jesus, Jack exclaimed. This bitch is full of surprises. What was the victim's name?
Jacqueline McDonald, age 34, from Austin, Texas.
Jack repeated this information to Roy, who was sat next to him, who jotted it down with a puzzled look on his face. Don, I want you to get all the passenger lists from...
I'm already on it, Jack. Jacqueline McDonald flew into Vegas about half an hour ago on United Airlines. United's limo service dropped her off at the Bellagio.
Well, we'd better start there.
I'm a step ahead of you, Jack. I've been on to the hotel, and she isn't registered there under that name, or any of the other major hotels.
Jack sighed wearily.
But I've got a team going over the apartment in L.A. as we speak, and I'll let you know if they find anything. That's the best I can do for now.
Jack thanked his friend and ended the call, dropping the cell into the small compartment between the two seats where it rattled around as the car jostled from side to side. Who the hell is Jackie McDonald? Roy asked, having heard Jack on the phone, but he was too busy looking for a page in his files and didn't even look up to reply. That's some nurse that Sabina killed in L.A. And you think that's the alias she's now using?
No, I don't think it is, Jack said. I know it is. This mother's smart. I knew she'd be here, and I was right.
Now, where's that list of hotels?
Jack was frustratingly looking through the reams of pages on his lap, searching for the one page that would actually be of some use, finally.
It's here, Jack. I've got it, Roy offered, handing the page over.
Right. We're going to pay all of these a visit and make sure every single one of them has their eyes open. She has got to be somewhere, and we know our Sabina has a taste for the finer things. I don't think we'll find her in some flea pit motel.
But as this information filtered through from L.A. to Jack and Roy, Sabina was a long way away from the hotels they were going to. She had left a trail in L.A. for sure, but she knew what she was doing and had got the limo to the hotel for a reason, to throw anyone looking for her off her tracks. She knew they'd find Jackie's apartment, but more to the point, she knew they would take the bait. As Jack and Roy headed off to the hotels and casinos on the Strip, Sabina was safely holed up in her safe house on the outskirts of the city, preparing for the evening. She showered and put on her makeup. The more feminine and petite she could make herself appear, the less people would suspect. She got dressed, putting on a pair of black pants and a shirt, and then put on the blonde wig. If Jack was up to scratch, he would have photos of her all over the city, and so she had to disguise herself as much as she could. She pulled the wig down tightly over her head and tucked her own hair underneath so none of it was showing, and then looked at herself in the mirror. Under the curling locks of fake blonde hair, she was almost unrecognizable from the photo she'd left in her office in Geneva all those weeks ago.